news break.
It's 10 minutes after 8 o'clock at listener-supported KGNU. Carl Pope was in Colorado a few days ago, stopped by the KGNU studios to offer a view of the United States from the head of one of the country's largest environmental groups. Carl Pope is executive director of the Sierra Club. He spoke with KGNU's Roger Wendell.
We're in the studio today with the executive director of the Sierra Club, Carl Pope. Carl, welcome to KGNU and Boulder and Denver.
It's great to be here today.
Carl, there's going to be a lot of questions on our minds about the environment coming through this election cycle, this upcoming election in just a few days from now, actually. What are your feelings in general? What direction are we going? Does it look positive in the view of you as the executive director in the Sierra Club in general?
Well, I'm very excited about this election. I think we have an opportunity to put America back on the right path towards a future in which we're smart about our energy solutions, we're smart about solving our environmental problems, and we get the kind of leadership from our politicians that I'm seeing all around this country from the American people, but then I'm not seeing from their leaders. So I think this is a real change election. This is an election where if we all use our voice, that voice will be heard, and that voice will take the country in a much more positive direction.
What's happened to that voice, though, in the last four, maybe six years in this country, in Colorado?
Well, I think what's been happening to that voice is that in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., we have leaders who don't believe in leadership. Now, we elected them, or in one case, the Supreme Court chose them. But they have been our leaders, and they've let us down very, very badly. What I've seen since the election of 2004 has been that in state after state, in city after city, people are not letting the breakdown in Washington hold them back. We have more than 300 cities now that have become cool cities, including Boulder and Denver, cities that are saying whatever the federal government may say, we're going to do our part to lick global warming. We have 11 states that have adopted really clean standards for cars that will get the CO2 out of the tailpipes. We have 15 states, including Colorado, of course, with the ballot measure you folks passed 2 years ago, which who have adopted renewable portfolio standards, which are now, just 2 weeks ago, the Chinese government announced that China's going to adopt the renewable portfolio standard model on those we have here in the U.S. So the rest of the world is watching America's cities and states. But the rest of the world is badly disappointed in our federal government, and it's time to change the folks we send to Washington and get some leadership there.
And what specifically are your expectations if the Democrats should happen to take control or retake control of Congress this election?
Well, I think the next 2 years at the federal level are going to be about setting an agenda. Because Bush will still be in the White House and because the Senate will be basically 50-50, whatever happens, I don't expect many new bold policy initiatives to actually pass at the federal level. What I'm hoping will happen, for example, is that if Colorado gets a new governor, that Colorado and other states can put in place policies that Washington will copy after the next presidential elections. So in Washington, the next 2 years is about setting the agenda. Right here in Colorado, it's about moving forward.
I want to back up for just a moment and talk just briefly, three sentences or less, the history of the Sierra Club. What is the Sierra Club for listeners that aren't familiar with it? How big is it? How did it get started?
We're 117 years old. We've got about 750,000 households around the country that belong. And we are an environmental organization whose specialty has always been helping ordinary people make a difference in getting environmental solutions adopted right in their own communities. So we are a grassroots organization. If you go to a zoning hearing or a planning board or a public hearing, you're going to find Sierra Club activists and volunteers there. We have more than 20,000 volunteers around the country who put in scores of hours every week to work with their friends and neighbors to make sure that they take care of the communities they live in and the places they love that are near those communities.
You've alluded to America's kind of piecemeal response to the Kyoto Protocol. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what is the state of the environment in general? Where are we at today? We're hearing a bit about global warming, maybe peak oil, those kinds of issues. What's a snapshot of the world today according to the Sierra Club?
Well, I think between 1970 and 2000, we made an enormous progress on problems like air pollution, water pollution, toxic chemicals, protecting parks and wilderness. From 2000 to 2006, we've been going backwards at the federal level. And all during that period, we never really, except briefly in the 1970s, took energy seriously. It's the 21st century. We can't power our economy, heat our homes, light our offices, run our laptops on 19th and 20th century technology and expect not to pay a very big price. And we don't need to. We have 21st century technology. And we're a very innovative people. There's no reason we should be behind the Chinese. Right now, if you took the cars on a used car lot in Denver or Boulder and you tried to sell them in China, you couldn't because American automobiles don't meet Chinese fuel economy standards. That's shameful.
You mentioned Chinese, us being an innovative people. Let's talk about people for a moment. Just a few days ago, we hit that 300 million mark as far as population. How does the Sierra Club look at population and address those related issues?
Well, one of the things we've learned in the last 30 years is that if you get everybody educated, if you give women opportunities, if you make sure that everybody has access to health care, all over the world, universally, parents decide to have small families because they want to educate their families. They now want to send their kids to college in parts of Africa where nobody went to college a generation ago. Every family wants their sons and daughters to go to college. And they understand if you have six or seven kids, you can't send them all to college. So we know now that we can lick the population problem if we start providing every family with certain basic opportunities. And the scandalous thing is that right here in the United States, we have a terrible record. We don't give kids access to sex education. We don't give families access to health care. We don't make sure that all of our children finish high school. Kids who finish high school have much brighter futures, and it happens they also have much smaller families. We actually have hundreds of thousands of abortions that happen in this country every year because we don't give people access to family planning. That's scandalous. We should be leading the world. We have the worst record on responsible sexuality and birth control of any country in the industrial world. We should change that.
If you don't mind, I heard you speak earlier in the day about some comparisons between these kinds of issues here in America and India. Would you care to maybe go through a little bit of a laundry list of some of the things you addressed?
Well, I'll give you a striking example. A year ago, I was in India when the city of Bombay, where I happened to be, was hit with 37.5 inches of rain in 12 hours. They had the same kind of flooding in Bombay that we had in New Orleans with Katrina. And they lost 1,000 people. They lost 1,500 people, actually. It was a very tragic event. I was just in Bombay a month ago. Bombay has made phenomenal progress. It's basically cleaned up. They've actually fixed Bombay. When I go to New Orleans now, a year later, we haven't managed to fix New Orleans. Our federal government, our governmental agencies are doing a less good job of taking care of business, the public's business, than the government of a much poorer and, frankly, much more corrupt country, which is India. That is because in India they seem to approach these things as problems to be solved. And our politicians are approaching these as sound bites to be thrown back and forth at each other.
For this interview, during this time of this interview, folks are going to be keenly interested in the election. And I want to go back to that just briefly because it's looming big. The question, though, is do you really feel there's a big enough difference for these issues between the Democrats and the Republicans? Would it make a difference if the Democrats took control?
Well, I don't think there's necessarily a difference between Democrats and Republicans. They're very good environmentalists in both parties, and they're very bad environmentalists, unfortunately, in both parties. And most voters are very strong environmentalists in both parties. But what we have right now in Washington is a leadership, which happens to be the leadership of the Republican White House and the Republican Congress, that has decided that for political reasons, not for environmental reasons, they're simply not going to let us make progress. So we need to change that leadership. I would love it if the Republican Party would elect responsible leadership in Washington. I think it's much more likely that we'll get responsible leadership from the Democrats. But I want to be clear. Democracy is not a once every 2 year event. We can't just go out and elect people to public office and then go back and assume they will take care of our business. They work for us. They are public servants. And if I hired people at my office and then went away for 2 years and didn't pay any attention to them, I probably wouldn't have a very good bottom line at the end of the 2 years. We've got to stay involved and stay on top of and stay engaged with the men and women we send back to Washington and that we send to Denver and to the county capitals here in Colorado. If we don't stay involved in democracy, we'll unfortunately get the kind of service we deserve from employees we pay no attention to. But they are our employees.
In our few remaining moments, let's look toward the future. What does the Sierra Club see as the actual future? I know it's difficult to make forecasts, especially about the future, but is there opportunity for optimism, especially for young people?
One of the remarkable things about the 21st century is no generation in human history has ever had as many tools to fix the problems that afflict humanity and that afflict the environment. I blog two or three times a week, and every single time I blog, I'm able to find some new solution to a global warming problem that somebody's implementing somewhere. There are so many opportunities out there if we have the will and the hope and the spirit to use them. But I have to say, we can't expect politicians and businesses to solve these problems for us. We have to get involved ourselves. We need leadership from the people, of the people, and by the people, as Lincoln said.
And that leads really into my final question. What can or what should people be doing of all ages?
In 2004, 200 million Americans cast a vote either for George Bush or John Kerry. In 2006, 65 million of those people are probably going to stay home. It is our job, each and every one of us, not only to vote, but to make sure that everybody we know votes. Because when a third of our democracy evaporates in 2 years, we're not setting ourselves on a path to leadership.
That was Carl Pope, Executive Director of the Sierra Club. For KGNU, I'm Roger Wendell.
It's 22 minutes after 8 o'clock at listener-supported KGNU, 88.5 FM and 1390 AM. Cloudy this morning, turning clear later.